From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, Manila, I greet you and welcome to yet another weekend across all these time zones in the world. What is it, 23, 24, 24 and a half, something like that. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, what a week it's been. It's been an amazing week. The news, of course, has shifted back from what happened in the air to the war between Israel and Hezbollah, and the news there is not good. More Israeli troops surged into southern Lebanon on Saturday, reaching the Litani River and engaging in some of the heaviest combat of the month-long war now, just hours after the UN Security Council adopted that ceasefire plan everybody knew was coming. Israel lost 19 soldiers, its highest one-day death toll. The leader of the Islamic militant group Hezbollah grudgingly joined Lebanon's government in accepting the UN resolution, but they vowed to keep fighting until Israeli troops leave and hand over territory to a muscular UN peacekeeping force intended to separate the two. Now, seems to me that Hezbollah, if they have grudgingly or otherwise accepted this, means that Israel, to me it means that Israel is probably having some measure of success in attaining its goals of pushing them back. The investigation into a plot to blow up jetliners kept me busy for a lot of the latter part of the week. I'm sure many of you awoke as we did on the morning of 9/11. Saw the continuous 24-hour coverage on all the news networks of what was going on and went, oh my God, not again. They were going to blow up jetliners over the Atlantic. They zeroed in Saturday on some brothers arrested in Pakistan and in Britain, one named as a key Al-Qaeda suspect who left the family's home in England years ago, and the other described as, get this, a gentle and polite person. A gentle and polite person. British authorities, meanwhile, warned against complacency, said the detention of several dozen suspects had not eliminated the danger. The terror threat in Britain remained critical. Its highest designation and delays, flight cancellations, and intense security continued to greet travelers at London airports. It kept me awake and in front of the screen for a couple of days, not knowing, of course, what was going to come next, as I'm sure many of you did not. I think it's worthy here to stop for a moment and give some credit to our intelligence agencies, don't you? I mean, we don't hear, for the most part, about intelligence successes. Well, here you've heard about one, finally. Most of them are kept quiet. You know, they succeed in preventing some awful thing like 9/11 from happening, and of course it's kept quiet. Generally, all you hear about are the failures of intel, and so the general opinion of intelligence around the world is rather low among the general public, but I would like to credit the intelligence agencies in Great Britain and, of course, here in the U.S. as well for stopping this before it actually happened. I got an interesting little fast blast from Cecilia in South Carolina, and as you know, all liquids are banned from aircraft. Cecilia, she has a question. It says, hello, Art, I have a question that I just have not heard an answer to. It's awfully personal, but I do need an answer. I'm flying soon, and I really do not want to be arrested. I, you see, use jelly implants inside my bra. Can I still use them? I am truly serious. Can't be the only one. I'm sure you're not, Cecilia. I have no idea. No idea, Cecilia. I guess I have no idea how to answer that question. None at all. In Baghdad, not a good day. 50 dead in Iraq. 50. Police found a dozen bodies trapped in a grate in the Tigris River. And a roadside bomb killed two soldiers on foot patrol south of Baghdad Saturday as nearly 50 violent deaths were reported across Iraq. So not going well there. The customs area at a Detroit airport was briefly shut down Saturday, get this, after a passenger claimed that he had contaminated everybody on the flight with a biological agent. Meanwhile, in Dallas, officials evacuated part of a terminal airport because a suitcase was smoking and leaking some unknown kind of liquid. Has the world lost its mind? That would be my question. Has the world lost its mind? It certainly seems so. Here in the Philippines, I know the news has been breaking in the U.S. about our volcano. I told you about that a few weeks ago. Six explosions occurred at the Mayan volcano for the past 24-hour observation period, to keep you up to date here. The seismic network reported these mild outbursts at 5:14 a.m., 5:18 a.m., 11:12 p.m., 2:55 p.m., and 3:50 p.m. yesterday, and 3:54 a.m. today. A big grayish cloud was briefly seen after the last ash explosion, which quickly dissipated and drifted off to the east-southeast of the volcano. Now, we are currently here in the Philippines at alert level 4 for this this volcano. It's a big one, and it could really blow, and frankly, they expect it to blow. This is, as a matter of fact, I got a warden message from the U.S. Embassy here in the Philippines suggesting that, indeed, it was a very dangerous time and that volcano may blow. Now, to put your mind at rest, we're about 225 miles or so from the volcano. The real danger zone is only about 7 kilometers at the most away from the volcano, so it's not going to affect us, at least I don't think it will. Here in Manila. It is nevertheless a very interesting volcano, and I have been noting that there is an airport. It would take several hours to drive there. I really would like to see it. I really would like to go take photographs of it, actually. And I've been talking to Erin about going down there to do that. She's not real on fire about the idea to do it, but she would be willing. So there is the possibility that I could hop on an aircraft and go down and see this volcano and take some photographs for you. It certainly would be interesting. At any rate, in a moment, we'll look at the rest of the news. The SETI at Home project is facing shutdown. How's that for a headline? The SETI at Home project has seen now over 5 million computer users donate runtime to the search for extraterrestrial life, but it's about to close if it doesn't get some cash. Project needs to raise about 750,000 pounds, English pounds, by the end of the year. And writer and futurist Sir Arthur C. Clarke has sent out a letter urging computer users to please send in donations. The project is updating its hardware and software and is running dangerously low on funds. Following the dot-com bust, the commercial support that kept SETI at Home running has largely dried up, he writes. Because of this loss of support, we can no longer count on any matching funds from the University of California. We're rapidly approaching the end of what funds we do have. The team has set up a special site where donors can contribute to the project. The SETI at Home project was launched back in 1999, the first large-scale software that used the spare capacity of ordinary PCs of all you out there to process data that would usually be done by supercomputers. The data comes from the Arecibo Observatory, and thus far 2.4 million years. That's 2.4 million years of processing time has been used to search for extraterrestrials, none found yet, they say. The world's second largest ice cap might be melting 3 times faster than indicated by all previous measurements. According to the newly released gravity data collected by satellites, the Greenland ice sheet shrank at a rate of about 239 cubic kilometers per year from April of 2002 to November of 2005. According to a team from the University of Texas at Austin, in the last 18 months of the measurements, ice melting has appeared to accelerate, particularly in southeastern Greenland. Now, this is particularly worrisome because there is a theory that the faster it melts, the faster it melts. Now, I don't know that this story on its own would validate that theory, but if it is a self-perpetuating process, that sort of gathers weight as a snowball would as it rolls down a mountain, then we indeed have something serious to worry about. More than 60% of the U.S. now has either abnormally dry or even drought conditions stretching from Georgia to Arizona, across the north, through the Dakotas, Minnesota, Montana, and Wisconsin. According to climatologists for the National Drought Mitigation Center at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, an area stretching from south-central North Dakota all the way to South Dakota is the most drought-stricken region in the nation. It is the epicenter. It's just like a wasteland in north-central South Dakota. Conditions are not much better farther south. Paul Smokoff and his wife, Betty, raised several hundred cattle on their 1,750-acre ranch north of Steele, a town of about 760. Fields of wheat, durum, barley in the Dakotas this dry summer will never end up as pasta, bread, or beer. What's left of the very stilted crops has been salvaged to feed livestock struggling on pastures where hot winds blow clouds of dirt or dried-out ponds. My God, that sounds bad. Or what about this? In the Gulf of Mexico, several miles off the Louisiana coast, lies one of the world's largest dead zones. That would be oxygen-deprived areas devoid of all marine life. In other words, nothing lives there. Researchers predict that this summer, the dead zone is going to grow to cover nearly 6,700 square miles, or an area roughly half the size of Maryland, and a whole lot bigger than its size in recent years of 4,800 square miles. Worst of all, the dead zone is from us. It's human-made. Runoff from farms in the Midwest adds as much as 7.8 million pounds of nitrate fertilizer to the Mississippi River, and of course its tributaries each day, during peak loading periods, which then, of course, runs downriver and empties right into the Gulf. As it does with plants grown on land, the nitrogen causes algae and plankton is very important to life, in the area to flourish, using all available oxygen in the water. The result, hypoxia, an oxygen-depleted dead zone in which fish and all other marine life, for that matter, simply cannot survive. Now, we're going to go to open lines shortly, so if you have something you want to get on the air, now would be a good time, but I want to get this story in. It's incredible. Brandy Koch of Clearwater, Florida, says she feels like she's living in a horror movie. She claims she has colored fibers coming out of her skin. Brandy, it seems, is married to Billy Koch, a former Major League Baseball player who is only one of a handful of pitchers who could throw the ball at more than 100 miles an hour. That's fast. Koch says her life was good till one day in the shower she noticed something strange. Tiny little fibers running through her skin. The fibers look like hair, but they're different, says Koch. Koch says she knows what she's experiencing sounds crazy, but it's true. If I had a family member call me up and say, I have this stuff, I'd say, I'm sending a straitjacket over. You need some help. Ann Dill describes a similar condition. Looking at Dill's life, it appears as if she's living an idyllic existence in a home on Florida's Lake Mary. Her three daughters excel in sports and are straight-A students, but life in the Dill household is far from idyllic. Ann's 40-year-old husband, Tom, died in January, and she believes his death was due to a contagious illness, that's contagious, folks, that has infected her entire family. Dill describes her family's skin. There's a fibrous material. It's in layers, she says. Dill says the skin on their hands is particularly bad, swollen, itchy. She says it feels as if bugs are crawling underneath the skin. Dr. Greg Smith of Gainesville, Georgia, has been a pediatrician for the past 28 years. Doctor, he claims a fiber is coming out of his big toe, and he has video footage to prove it. He says, quote, it felt like somebody stuck a pin in my toe and wiggled it, and it just continued to hurt. Smith says he never thought that he had bugs. I've certainly had those crawling sensations, and the fibers which come out of the skin are really bizarre and really odd. When Koch, Dill, and Smith consulted doctors, they received diagnoses that they call either wrong or dismissive. Dill's doctor told her to stop scratching. And even though many of her sores were in places she couldn't even reach, Koch went on to the Mayo Clinic, where doctors didn't believe that fibers she'd brought them had grown from her body. Quote, I saw the infectious disease doctor. I showed him some samples that I had, and he snickered. I can't go through another doctor blowing me off or looking at me like I'm crazy. I know I'm not, said Koch. Smith, a doctor, of course, himself, was handed over to a hospital psychiatrist when he went to the patient, when he went to the emergency room, claiming a fiber in his eye. He admits that he, too, would be somewhat skeptical if a patient were to come to him with the same story. I'd wonder if they'd taken their medicine that day. Made no sense at all. It's totally bizarre. It's something that just, well, telling the story is so outlandish on the face of it that no one would believe it. At any rate, apparently all of this is true. It's called Morgellons disease, and about 45 people are estimated to have it. I would like to know more about it. It's first I've ever heard of it. It seems like I've heard the name before, Morgellons disease, but fibers growing out of your skin? Fibers that they test and they cannot confirm that indeed they've come from a biological organism. In fact, they have absolutely no idea what they are. I guess you all know that on Mount Graham in Arizona, the Catholic Church, actually the Vatican, has a big telescope. Mile after slow winding mile, a line of vans steadily advanced up the side of the rugged mountain. When the bumpy, rudimentary road dead ended at a closed gate, a priest jumped out of the lead vehicle, unlocked it, and waved the caravan through. There, more than 10,000 feet above the Arizona desert, appeared the unlikely sight, a very unlikely sight, one of the most advanced telescopes on Earth. A piece of equipment contained a mirror so fragile that some had joked it would require divine intervention to haul the mirror to the very peak of Mount Graham without ever damaging. But they did, of course. Even more unlikely was a small plaque indicating the telescope's primary owner, the Vatican, an institution known for its focus on ancient religion, not cutting-edge science. And it goes on to describe this telescope. It's certainly one of the best in the world, but the big question I have always had, I've known about this for a very long time, I'm sure many of you have, is what is the Vatican looking for? What do you suppose it is that the Vatican expects to see? I guess that'd be the right way to put it, right? What do they expect to see? A pair of strange new worlds that blur the boundaries between planets and stars have been now discovered beyond our solar system. A few dozen such objects have been identified in recent years, but this is the first set of twins, that's in quotes. Dubbed plasmos, they circle each other rather than orbiting a star. Their existence challenges current theories about the formation of planets and stars. It is a truly remarkable pair of twins, said one astronomer, each having only about 1% the mass of our sun. Its mere existence is quite a surprise, and its origin is a bit of a mystery. A double planet, if you really want to call them planets at all. Now, somebody sent this to me, and I thought it was a riot. It's called Rules for Pets. It is designed to be posted very low on the refrigerator door, nose height, for example. It would simply read, Dear Dogs and Cats, the dishes with the paw prints are yours and contain your food. The other dishes are mine and contain my food. Please note, placing a paw print in the middle of my plate does not make the food nor stake a claim for it being yours and your dish, nor do I find that aesthetically pleasing in the slightest. The stairway was not designed by NASCAR and is not a racetrack. Beating me to the bottom is not the object. Tipping me doesn't help because I fall faster than you can run. I cannot buy anything bigger than a king-size bed. I'm very sorry about this. I do not think I will continue sleeping on the couch to ensure your comfort. Dogs and cats can actually curl up in a ball when they sleep. It is not necessary to sleep perpendicular to each other, stretched out to the fullest extent possible. I also know that sticking tails straight out and having tongues hanging out the other end to maximize space is nothing but sarcasm. For the last time, there is not a secret exit from the bathroom. If I, by some miracle, beat you there and manage to get the door shut, it is not necessary to claw, whine, meow, try to turn the knob, or get your paw under the edge and try to pull the door open. I must exit through the same door I entered. Also, I've been using the bathroom for years. Canine or feline attendance is not mandatory. The proper order is kiss me and then go smell the other dog or cat's butt. I cannot stress this enough. To pacify you, my dear pets, I have posted the following message on our front door. And following the break, I will relate that message to you. And I will also go to open line. So any of you who have anything you want to say that is unusual, strange, informative, or even mildly entertaining, now would be the time to pick up the phone and let's have at it. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. With a big volcano rumbling, actually getting ready to blow up to the south of me. Howdy, all. Let me finish up. Having said all that to the pets, there is now, to pacify them, the following posted on the front door of this person. To all non-pet owners who visit and like to complain about our pets. One, they live here. You don't. Two, if you don't want their hair on your clothes, stay off the furniture. That's why they call it furniture. Three, I like my pets a lot better than I like most people. Four, to you it's an animal. To me, he, she is an adopted son and or daughter who is short, hairy, walks on all fours, and doesn't speak clearly. Remember, dogs and cats are better than kids because they, one, eat less, don't ask for money all the time, are easier to train, usually come when called, never drive your car, don't hang out with drug-using friends, don't smoke or drink, don't worry about having to buy the latest fashions, don't wear your clothes, don't need a gazillion dollars for college, and if they get pregnant, you can sell their children. All right, open lines, promised open lines, it shall be. On the wild card line, you have achieved the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Do you believe in, have you ever heard of the Freemasons?
I've heard of them, yes, yes.
Maybe there's a treasure, I believe there is.
A treasure?
Yeah. Like
and the Freemasons are keeping the secret, keeping the treasure,
yeah.
I see. Actually, for years, sir, people have accused me of being a 33rd degree Mason, and I got so sick of it. That and the fact that they would accuse me of being a CIA member, that I finally stopped denying it. It was easier to say, well, yeah, you know, sure, I am. If you want to believe that, go ahead and believe it. It actually works better than a denial. So there's a little secret for some of you budding talk show hosts out there. Don't deny these things. Of course, the result of that has been there are any number of websites across the internet that have big Masonic symbols and my name in the center and all sorts of weird symbols and the rest of it. But that's all right. I don't mind. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. I hope you don't mind a few questions about the Philippines, or
no? Ask away.
Okay, good. Number one, is it Friday there, or is it Saturday?
Actually, it's Sunday.
Oh, it's Sunday. Wow.
Yeah, it's Sunday at about 2:40 or so in the afternoon.
I guess I should say good afternoon then.
Well, you may if you wish. Anything else?
Yeah, did you have to convert to Catholicism to marry your wife?
No. No, and I have not yet converted to Catholicism. I'm really considering it very heavily. I went to my first Catholic Mass several weeks ago, and there's every possibility that I may convert.
Because I heard you talking about the family life over there. Do you plan on propagating?
No, but I don't plan on not propagating either, if you follow me.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So, you know, what'll be will be.
Yeah. Did you meet your wife on the internet?
I did not. I met my wife through a very good friend of mine, an amateur radio operator in Arkansas, who knew that my wife had passed away and was dating a gal over here, and Erin was her sister.
Oh, I see. That's nice. Well,
anything else?
No, I was just wondering, does it make you feel strange walking down the street because you're the only Caucasoid?
The only Caucasoid. No. No, it does not. It might interest some of you to know, just adding a couple of factoids here, that Americans are by far not the the biggest group of retirees here in the Philippines, and I'm going to get this wrong, but I'm close to being right. The largest group here, I believe, is Japanese of retirees, people retiring in the Philippines, followed by, I think, the Chinese and the Koreans. And so Americans are somewhere down the list, fourth or fifth or something like that. No, I spent, as many of you know, I spent 10 years in the Orient, 10 years on the island of Okinawa, which has a very similar climate to the Philippines. It's hot, it's humid, and it's tropical. There's simply no two ways around it. It's definitely tropical. So, no, I don't feel at all odd. To answer your question, it is a lovely, lovely land, and the people are really first class. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Howdy, Art. This is Colleen from Colorado.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I had a question. Before you moved, I always envisioned you out there in your studio, surrounded by the darkness, and, you know, it lent sort of a spooky air to things.
I'm still surrounded by the darkness. What I do, Colleen, is, first of all, the first thing I installed when I got here were mini blinds, followed by some very dark curtains. So I've got both of those closed, and the atmosphere in here is every bit as dark and foreboding as it might be in the middle of the night in the desert.
Okay, that's how you maintain your ambiance.
That's how I do it.
Okay, thanks.
You're very welcome. That was an easy one, yes. I find it important to still have that, as she put it, ambiance around me as I do the program. I'm not sure why, but that's the very first thing I did. We ordered mini blinds for the entire condo, then put in some very dark. You know what? I took a photograph, I had Erin take a photograph of me sitting in my work position here. Just prior to the beginning of the program, I had forgotten to do that, so I did that, and I will rush in during the top of this next hour, process the photograph, if I'm able to that quickly, and send it up to the net so you can actually see where I am. You can see at least a portion of the small room from which I broadcast. On the first-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello. This is Ryan from Dayton.
From where?
Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio. Okay, buddy. Welcome.
Well, I got a story I've recounted a bunch of times, but never for so many people. But as I said, I live in Dayton by the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and I had gathered with some friends of mine on 9/11. I don't remember the exact time of the afternoon. It was early afternoon, and we heard a loud explosion. It shook the entire house, and we were watching all the news reports about 9/11, and you know, we immediately freaked out and ran outside, and there's everybody else in the neighborhood. And I've never heard anything about this since, but everybody's staring out in the sky, kind of wondering what was that. And we saw a large, kind of like a contrail, but just aiming straight down, kind of east of us. And we heard it again. We felt this large explosion again. And we run inside and start checking news reports, and there was reports of a plane down. There was reports just of there's been an explosion.
All right, I take it you're referring to the plane that went down in Pennsylvania?
No. This was, I live in Dayton, Ohio.
I understand.
And the news reports covered different stories of how this happened, and eventually they converged on the same story several hours later and said, well, there was a fire at the VA hospital, and those booms that everybody heard were sonic booms. And I've been to air shows and seen the sonic boom, you know, right over your head. And it, nobody that I know in any military or any background thought that this was the sonic boom. We heard two of them, saw a large smoke trail, and it was just the media reports were vastly different than that.
All right, so in what way was this related to 9/11, or was there no relationship at all?
It was just on that day.
Oh, it was just on that day.
9/11/2001, it was the day.
Okay, well, interesting, but I guess not related in some way. There may be others who experience that or know of what you speak, but it sounds like there's no relationship. Again, waking up the other day and hearing about the horrid mess going on in Britain, you know, the attempt to take down planes on their way to America, reminded me in its the urgency, I guess, of its coverage, the way it was covered, it reminded me of 9/11, and I was hoping and praying that we were not in the middle of what would have been a 9/11, and certainly had this been carried out, it would have been as bad or worse in terms of loss of life than 9/11 was. So I must admit, it shook me up pretty well. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art Bell?
That would be me.
Hi, Art. I've been listening to you for a really, really long time, and I'm a huge fan of yours. I used to be a StreamLink member, and I'm very saddened that you're not up 5 days a week.
Well, I'm just happy to be here on the weekends. That's quite sufficient for me.
Right. Well, I've got a problem, and I'm going to be very frank with you, and I want you to, you know, try and see if you can help me.
Okay.
Okay. I'm having a little problem with separating what a person believes from what a person does as art. An example this past week was Mel Gibson. But also, I'm having kind of an issue with things that George Norrie says and a statement you made last weekend when they were discussing the situation with privacy concerns on the Internet. And
right.
I'm trying to decide, when you're listening to somebody who's an artist, because you're an artist, because what
I
consider an art. I mean,
okay, well, thank you.
But, you know, when someone makes statements and, you know, they held certain statements and certain value systems and certain ways of thinking that are kind of an opposite or really contrasting with your own. And this comes down to the problems that are happening in America between the left and the right political spectrum, too. But just in general, how do you or can you just compartmentalize that and just say, look, I really appreciate this book or this movie or the radio show or whatever, and say, look, I'll continue to take advantage of what this person produces, but even though what they believe is offensive to my value system.
Well, first of all, are you sure that you're hearing what this person really believes? Particularly,
well,
for
thing.
Example, when you're talking about talk show hosts, whether it's myself or George or anybody else, this is a program that specializes in airing the views of people that are very non-standard, to put it lightly. And so just because something is said and it appears that a talk show host agrees with what's being said does not mean that that really represents their line of thought or their value system or anything else.
Really? So it's just for entertainment's sake? So like
I wouldn't go that far. Not everything is for entertainment's sake, and there's a lot of very important information that crosses these airwaves, but don't believe everything you hear here or anywhere else.
Okay. Well, thank
All
you
right.
so much, Art. It's been really an honor and a pleasure to speak with you. I've been wanting to speak with you for years.
Take care, my friend, and that goes for the rest of you, too. Be very cautious about what you believe, and there are many things that you will hear on this program that probably are utter garbage, and there are other nuggets and things you will hear on this program that turn out to be insightful, predictive, and far ahead of the rest of the media. So it is up to you, I've always said this, to separate the two and to make up your mind which is which. On the international line, you are on the air. Greetings.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning.
This is Dan Wilcox, from Greenfield Park, Quebec, Canada.
Yes, sir.
We go back away. You might remember me as saying, I'm such a polite Canadian, we even apologize to furniture when we bump into it.
You know, I do recall that.
Thank you. Thank you. And I just in passing, that was an amazing statement you just made to that previous caller about the content of your program. I've never heard such honesty. But the reason I'm phoning tonight is my wife and I were watching CNN one night, not quite a year ago, and we heard a story about a woman who had been arrested at the Swiss border. And she had been arrested. I don't know if that was the cause, but when she was arrested, she had a large amount of money on her in a suitcase. The further details was she was the wife of a high-ranking Pentagon or Defense Department official.
Mm-hmm.
And what really stood out about the story was she had been, her name was on one of the passenger manifests of one of the planes that went down on 9/11. And when we heard that, I said to my wife, boy, this is really going to hit the fan, you know? And it's one of those
But names can be similar. I mean, can you truly know that it was, in fact, the same person?
Well, I didn't recognize the name, but they described her as the wife of they gave the name, but then they said her husband's position at the Pentagon. Huh. You know, like, I mean, I'm not saying it was Mrs. Rumsfeld or something, but they did name her, and they said the husband of Defense Department, blah, 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 or whatever, you know? And I said, well, this is really going to, you know, hit the fan or something, but so, like, so many of these stories, you hear them once, and you think, oh, wow, this is going to be something, and then...
And then they disappear, yeah.
You know,
I'm familiar with that. I of course, have no way of answering this specific question, but there are, indeed, a lot of stories like that. And you go, what? You know, it's the kind of story where you go, what? And then you intently listen during the next hour's newscast and the successive days, and you don't hear another word about it. So there are those kinds of stories. However, I think that if anybody purported to be dead on one of the planes that was used during 9/11 actually showed up somewhere, there would be a hornet's nest and stories that would follow that just would not quit. Because, as you know, there are thousands of people searching for information that they believe will prove 9/11 was an inside job. I am not one of those people. I do not believe that. I think it is exactly what it was. And I think that what almost happened, what could have happened this last week, was exactly the same thing. It was not any sort of inside job. We have a pretty good lead on what kind of group it was already. It wasn't any sort of inside job. It's somebody who hates us. There are people out there who hate us and they want us dead. Make no mistake about that. A lot of people out there simply want us dead. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Art, it is truly an honor. This is TJ from Detroit.
Hey there.
When I was doing security, I actually came across the car that appeared to be a rental. In the back of the car, there were three boxes, each box had flammable on it, and there was a large cooler that was taped shut. In the back seat, I did find a duffel bag that contained a hazmat suit, and it was right before the Super Bowl, and I called 911, and for some reason, the 911 operator refused to send a police car to check it out.
Oh, no, see, that's pretty weird already.
Yeah, absolutely. The next morning, the car disappeared just as mysteriously as...
Back up. I mean, you found hazardous material. You found a hazmat suit. You called 911, and they refused. Why?
Because she said, how do you know what's in the boxes or in the cooler? And I said, I don't know what's in it, but something's going on, and I think someone should check it out. And she refused.
That's very difficult to believe. I guess, you know, I mean, you're telling me it happened, but in this day and age, everybody knows what's happened. You know, if I were a 911 operator, and frankly, I used to be one, and I got a call like that, I can assure you there would have been a lot on the way, buddy.
Yeah, well, you know what? It was a couple weeks before the Super Bowl, and I did turn it over to Homeland Security, and I actually drove to the precinct. And actually got one of the detectives to actually drive over the vehicle because they agreed that something was going on.
And?
The police got there. They said, yeah, you know what, you're right. Something is fishy about it, but we have, you know, we can't, you know, find anything on the plate. And I said, well, of course, because it's a rented car. So they just left it as it was. Nothing happened.
Boy, that's pretty weird stuff, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, take care. I'm glad that apparently we seem to be doing better. And again, the fact that they actually got onto this plot and got everything stopped before it became a 9/11 or worse, I think is to the credit of British and American intelligence agencies. And I really would like to give credit where credit is due, because they just don't get enough of it. I think they stop a lot of things like this before they ever get off the ground. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, intel agencies. From the Philippines, specifically Manila, I'm Art Bell.